This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharad Abdullah and Wong Shaoning. Last Thursday, Mike Pompeo reassured ASEAN members that they need not choose between the US and China.
So he made this statement at the ASEAN meeting held in Bangkok. He also said that the US engagement in the Southeast Asian region has not been and will never be a zero-sum game. This is a result of two economies being involved in our economy, really. And Pompeo also iterated that his nation's interest simply converges with ASEAN. For mutual benefit.
Yes, he maintained that the US is still a key player in Southeast Asia region. This is amidst China's ever-growing political, economic and military presence in the region.
I think the bigger question is not whether or not the US will no longer be a key player, as to whether who will the Southeast Asian countries eventually veer towards in the long run, right? As we see China increasing its security and economic partnerships here in the region.
And the checkbook diplomacy. The ever-important checkbook diplomacy.
And who tweets less?
China doesn't tweet. Do they even allow tweets in China?
Ooh, interesting.
No, right? No Facebook, no Google. So I don't think no tweets.
No social media whatsoever. So for more on this, we speak to Aaron Connolly, Research Fellow in Southeast Asian Political Change and Foreign Policy with the International Institute for Strategic Studies. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Aaron. So in your view, what was Pompeo's key message to ASEAN member countries here?
Mike Pompeo really wants ASEAN countries to feel like the U.S. can be an economic partner to them. And I think that's a difficult path for an administration that pulled the United States out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So he's trying to emphasize these longstanding economic ties between American companies and Southeast Asian businesses. He cited in his speech at Siam Society the example of a Thai chicken farmer who started a small chicken farm and has grown to five chicken farms, and he works with a U.S. company, Cargill. So he was trying to cite very specific examples of the ways that the U.S. economy is intertwined with Southeast Asia's economies in very specific ways without pointing to specific new policy steps that the United States is taking.
And Aaron, how does ASEAN fit in the U.S.-China trade war?
I think it's clear that some ASEAN countries are taking a pretty big hit from the trade war. Here where I sit in Singapore, we've seen quarterly GDP decline by over 3%. But on the other hand, some ASEAN countries, Vietnam in particular, are beginning to benefit from the trade war. So companies that had been doing manufacturing in China or finishing manufacturing in China are now moving those processes to Vietnam. And so Vietnam's GDP growth last quarter jumped unexpectedly to the high 7% range. And so part of Pompeo's message and part of the U.S. goal is to move some of these economic activities between the United States and China, move them from China to ASEAN so that there are closer linkages between the United States and ASEAN countries and fewer linkages between the United States and China.
But at the same time, Aaron, U.S. has also put Malaysia and Vietnam on their own respective watch lists, which doesn't help in terms of how we view U.S. Ties, is it? Does it?
No, absolutely not. And I think it's indicative of this fight in the administration, in the Trump administration in Washington, between those in the White House who are very focused just on trade issues, and they don't have a broader strategic perspective. They're not that worried about China as a great power competitor like the Defense Department is. And then you have others in the Trump administration who really do see the sort of long-term defense and strategic competition with China as the main game, and trade as kind of a sideshow to that, or something that's happening that contributes to that competition, but it's which is not the main game. And so you do have the USTR, the U.S. Trade Representative, putting Malaysia, Vietnam on a watch list. But at the same time, you have others of the administration saying, no, we got to take it easy on them because they're our future partners in the region.
At the same time, Aaron, was there any significant discussion around the issue of the South China Sea?
There was, and actually the last few ASEAN meetings have been relatively quiet on the South China Sea. I think a number of ASEAN countries' governments have not wanted to upset things with China. They see negotiations moving, although moving very slowly, on a code of conduct in the South China Sea. But because of recent activities in the South China Sea, particularly Chinese aggression at Laconia Breakers in Malaysia, and then also at Vanguard Bank in Vietnam, we've seen more discussion last week at the ASEAN meeting of the South China Sea. There was a very strong statement by Vietnam opposing some of the Chinese actions, and some of the other countries who were present were not ASEAN countries, because remember, this is a much broader regional forum. So Australia was there, Japan was there, the U.S. was there, the EU, all of them made statements opposing Chinese actions in the South China Sea, recent actions.
Thank you so much, Aaron. And that was Aaron Connolly, Research Fellow in Southeast Asian Political Change and Foreign Policy with the International Institute for Strategic Studies. And this is quite an interesting subject, right? Because as I think Aaron mentioned, what I took from that is that the U.S. administration essentially works in silos, right? Because that could be the reason for this disjointed messaging. On the one hand, you've got people saying that, China is a great power threat to the U.S. On the other hand, it is just Southeast Asia kind of falls by the wayside. You don't really know quite where we're going in terms of the U.S. Cohesive strategy towards ASEAN.
Yeah, especially, a lot of ASEAN countries, we have an open economy. We do rely on both, both of the major economies when it comes to trade in particular. But I think what's interesting is always is that subject where the Southeast, South China Sea in particular, especially when we're looking at a lot of livelihood of a number of ASEAN countries are centered within this area. And, with the increased military presence of China within that area, and also how, it has been accused along the way of how it's threatening the fishing vessel within the contested water.
Well, one of the issues about ASEAN is the whole nature of its setup, right, where it's very consensus-driven, where it doesn't really impose any views. So I wonder, in that way, ASEAN doesn't seem to have a very strong voice, especially when it comes to defense. It's only recently, I think, because there's been more incursions by the Chinese in the South China Sea waters. Also, in terms of economic cooperation, there's a lot of talk. But if you try to look for a policy in black and white as to what ASEAN will do as an economic bloc, it's relatively quiet. Most countries operate in silos, and that is the deficiencies of ASEAN, actually.
And Aaron also mentioned the code of conduct, and one of the reasons why there's been discussion about it at the most recent meeting, because it seemed to have been making strides toward that code of conduct. I'm always very skeptical whenever someone touts the COC, the code of conduct, as something that is nearly at hand, because it has been nearly at hand for 17 years. Okay, the code of conduct was first mooted in 2002, and as yet we still don't have any resolution on that front, so we actually don't have any certainty over whether or not Chinese behaviours in the South China Sea will be regulated. And I think that is really the biggest issue. It is China's actions within the South China Sea that no one can quite predict. And that is one of the more longer-running disputes in our region, I think, that we will have to be keeping an eye out.
It can be intimidating.
It can be intimidating indeed. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes.